Netflix and Brews series, and for those of you that have been here before, this is a series that covers this local restaurant bar, Ariadne, and the way that evenings work. We'll have a reading and a Q&A in here, then we're going to have a book signing in the store, and then after the signing, you're all invited to go down the street to Ariadne. As many of you know, Mel is the author of the collection Lucky Girls, which was one of my all-time favorite works. It's also a New York Times notable book. One of the Sue Kaufman Prize from the American Academy of Arts and Letters, and she's here tonight in celebration of her debut novel, The Dissident, which is an incredibly ambitious and entertaining work. Sean Wisely called it utterly surprising, saying she has created characters and situations of great emotional and historical depth. I told her with all the honesty that I had inside of me that I thought she is one of the most accomplished writers and brilliant minds in literature that I've had the pleasure and honor of hosting. We shouldn't laugh at that, I said. So it's a real honor to have her in my store and get to hear her read from her work. Just help me welcome Mel Friedenberger.
On their faces as they labor to reproduce the striated tubes of wood. I envision their happiness the day their leaves attain the quality of translucence possible only with water-based ink. I went confidently into my first day of teaching at an American school and failed to consider that the St. Anselm's girls might have other ideas. As at a Chinese school, the St. Anselm's girls wore uniforms, but what uniforms? Short dresses in pastel colors, pink, white, yellow, and violet, curly S.A. embroidered on the right sleeve. They wore heavy black and white saddle shoes, a design I had never seen and never did see outside the white brick perimeter of the St. Anselm's campus. To my surprise, the students also wore men's undershorts and bright stripes and plaids hanging out from underneath their skirts. It took me very little time to see that this allowed them to sit in class with their knees apart, gazing out the windows of the art studio, scratching one leg at a time with the opposite shoe. I will tell you, I was angry. All of that space and all of those fine materials to girls who could not even keep their legs together as a gesture of respect in front of a visiting teacher. And their bamboo was enough to make you cry. They overloaded the brush with ink so that it was impossible to get any variation in the stalks, more like the bars of a cage than any living thing, and left soft spots that bled through and sometimes even tore the fine paper. Oops, they said when this happened and giggled. Of course, there was always more paper. I had 9 students in advanced placement studio art, including Olivia Travers, none of whom was especially advanced. They were putting together portfolios. Each portfolio was supposed to demonstrate the students' progress in 3 specific areas, drawing, sculpture, color/design, as well as a selection of work on an individual theme. The themes, which they chose themselves, were as follows. Emily, the seasons. Olivia, the ocean. Jenna, the mountains. Courtney, time travel. Lizzie, time. Holly, outer space. Katie, France. Kate, France. Catherine, love. Love, I asked Catherine. I didn't mean to be discouraging. In fact, my plan was to be as accommodating as possible so that the students would have no reason to complain. The problem was that I often forgot my plan and imagined that I was an actual teacher with a responsibility to correct my students' errors and guide their progress. Do you think love is too abstract? What do you mean? Too broad? It's not as broad as outer space, Catherine said, shooting a glance at Holly, who looked mutely to Emily for support. I think love is tres sampa, Emily said. Outer space is kind of weird, Catherine smiled and tossed her hair. But deep, Emily finished, very deep. Holly looked relieved. As our semester progressed, I would learn that Emily was the final arbiter of all disputes, the judge of who was acting psycho or paranoid, and what was at that moment Sampa Adorable, or Super, along with Emily and Olivia, several of the girls had just returned from St. Anselm's summer abroad program in France. France was truly Super that year. Should two of you have the same theme? I asked Kate and Katie. They have the same name, Emily said. Others nodded at the truth of this observation. I only wonder what will happen when we send our portfolio to the AP Board of Judges. It could make mine French things, Kate suggested. Okay, Mr. Zhao? I had tried to correct their misconception of my name. I had little hope of Yuan Lanshe, but Teacher Yuan or even Mr. Zhao would have been fine. However, once Emily had christened me, I was Mr. Zhao for good. Without her connection to Emily, it might have been difficult for Olivia to surmount what in China would have once been called a problematic family background, a Chinese art teacher living at her house, and a mother who volunteered as an intern coordinator right downstairs in the library. It was Cece who came upstairs one day to pin to my bulletin board the announcement of a contest, a ceremonial centerpiece for the celebration of St. Anselm's sesquicentennial. The winner's design will decorate the Malmsteg courtyard during the ceremony, Cece told the class. The vice principal would like you girls to consider the long history of our school and your designs. And we've collected some resources for you in the library, if you'd like to do some research. At this, there were some titters, to my mind, inexplicable. I had found in my own schooling that the announcement of a contest was always greeted with great enthusiasm. Perhaps these American girls had gotten too accustomed to the frequent opportunities to prove themselves and to be rewarded. But I'm sure the most important thing is just to be creative, Cece said, smiling at me. And think about the dimensions of the courtyard, I added, but no one seemed to be paying attention. Olivia looked nervous as her mother left the room, her heels clicking on the gray linoleum. But Mrs. Travers was, if not super cool, then at least perfectly correct with her silk twin set and very large diamond earrings. You have an adorable mom, Emily told her loud enough for the class to hear. Maya is such a bitch. Instead of reprimanding Emily for her language, I shared Olivia's relief. I'm ashamed to admit that on this and other occasions, I made use of the Travers glamour, which clung even to me, temporarily, like sweet-smelling rubber cement. At least at the beginning, I coasted through AP Studio Art on a combination of adopted pedigree and novelty value. Then, one morning in October, we got our 10th student. This was the same morning that Olivia, working from a model I had taped up on the blackboard, decided to paint a lobster. Like this, she asked, Mr. Zhao? Her lobster had 15 tail segments, like a dragon. It had very short antenna, a cluster of them streaming back behind each eye, as if it were standing in a strong breeze. The antenna must move forward, I told her. The lobster uses them to make his way. He can't see well from his eyes, you know. Those aren't antenna. I confess I was relieved. What are they? They're eyelashes. Emily said, come say Brema Adorab. It is possible to accept a position as a teacher, say, at a high school for young women, intending to do and say nothing that will antagonize anyone, to accept even the strangest customs, white-dressed adolescent girls in outmoded children's clothing, for example. But I have found that it's difficult to maintain that posture over weeks and months. It's hard to remember how you plan to act. It's very hard to pretend anything for a long period of time. Lobsters do not have eyelashes, I said, perhaps more forcefully than I had intended. The other girls looked with concern at Olivia, who was hiding her face in her hair. I was trying to make it unique, she said softly. I was just trying to express myself. You do not need to express yourself, I told her excitedly. You need to express a lobster. Olivia was crestfallen. I felt sorry. Pardon me, I said. May I borrow your chair? All of the girls looked at me with surprise. Since I'd arrived, they'd been asking me to paint something like the bold, candy-colored abstraction on the poster Principal McCoy had hung, to my embarrassment, outside my classroom door. The poster was from DN Nature, the 1991 show at TFAM in Taipei, the same paintings that would be shown at UCLA's Fowler Museum in just a few months. Although they were now more than 10 years old, my cousin and I had decided that the attention the paintings would get in America was worth the risk of shipping them. Truthfully, X had been more convinced of this than I was, as someone whose greatest artistic influence was a man obsessed with the damage that air and light inflict on ink and paper. I have never been sure that attention is good for paintings. The paintings I began to make that year in California, ink sketches of lobsters and bamboo, rocks, clouds, trees, and finally mountains, were not what the faculty was expecting. Mrs. Travers and Principal McCoy in particular were perplexed, but as their Yuan Zhao originals, they were accepted gracefully and hung in the Marion Caldwell Memorial Gallery, where they naturally faded into their environment, becoming as unremarkable as the orange carpet or the plant-filled atrium. Only occasionally you might see a young woman collapsed on the floor with a textbook raise her eyes to what I now realize were sketches from my project in exile, or copies of the Tiantai Mountains, where Tsanyu and Shan Ren had once wandered, gathering herbs and dreaming of the passage to an immortal realm. My class was eager to see me paint. Even Olivia seemed to have forgotten her lobster. She stepped back and offered me her easel. You could see she was proud that I would be using her tablet. I admit that I wanted to impress them. Vanity, X used to say, is the downfall of the artist. He would say this with a wink, swinging his shiny hair. It was vanity that led me to paint a very large lobster, very fast, in Olivia's Caran d'Ache watercolor tablet. I didn't recognize that at first. I told myself that I was contributing to Olivia's theme of the sea. I instructed as I painted, a light touch on the head. The eye is the only time I will ask you to dip your brush directly in the ink. The wrist is loose, but controlled. Am I going to get to keep this? Olivia asked. Remember, as you make the body, to press the brush like a stamp. The right amount of ink will leave a mottled texture on the shell. 3 segments for an ordinary lobster, 4 for a big one. I had been watching some television lately, paying particular attention to the commercials. I found them beautiful and reassuring. Let's make a big lobster, I said now. Let's supersize it. My students giggled. I had made a joke in English. Perhaps it was this small success that caused me to reach up theatrically and yank a few hairs from the crown of my head in the manner of my teacher, Wang Wangshu. The pain was sharp and my eyes watered. I noticed that my students had stepped back. They were whispering. This is AP art, Emily said suddenly. And I was afraid that she had somehow seen what was wrong with my work, that she was calling me a fake. I think you can learn from this, I said, but I did not sound confident. Even the stupidest student can hear weakness in a teacher's voice. What are you doing here? Emily demanded. The hairs on my arm stood on end. I stared at my lobster, but how could he help me? He didn't even have his antenna yet. As I was turning to face my students, having lost my face, I heard a voice. I'm transferring. Standing in the front of our class was a Chinese girl, or rather, a Chinese girl with an American voice, what is called a Chinese American. She had short hair and a wide face, a country face, but beautiful, like old pictures of my paternal grandmother on her wedding day in Taiwan. She was wearing the same uniform as the other girls, and also she was not. She was wearing the lavender dress, hemmed just as short as Emily's and Olivia's, but underneath she had put on a pair of wine-colored corduroy pants, which were spattered with paint, an addition that had the effect of making the dress ridiculous, or rather, since the dress was already ridiculous, making a comment about its ridiculousness. She was wearing a beaded choker around her neck and a tiny ruby stud in her left nostril, like a Hindu. The stud exactly matched the color of her trousers, which were wide and frayed at the bottom, so that they nearly covered her shoes. There was something strange about her shoes as well. It took me a moment to see that she had painted the stamped leather band on each shoe white and the rest of the upper black. The inversion was jarring if you were used to the ordinary model. My AP artists pinched each other's arms and stepped on each other's feet. It was soft, untraceable giggling. I think the class is full, said Emily. Isn't it, Mr. Zhao? I am Yuan Zhao, Yuan Lasha, I told the new student. I'm June, the student said. I'd like to take your class. Stop there. Thank you so much. Fewer. And by and there's just me and somebody else. And I was trying to think, I mean, I was a really, really profoundly untalented art student, and I was wondering what it was that kept me going back. And I think that he was the first art teacher in any form who said to us, that's wrong. You know, a bamboo has four segments, not three. The lobster has six legs, not eight. And we couldn't believe it because the only thing anyone had ever said to us was be creative, you know, express yourself. Here's a wet piece of paper, very 70s American kind of educational model. And so I got interested in, I never made any progress in art, but with the idea of writing that you learn direct from copying the writers that you love, even when you're doing it unconsciously. And that's more of, that sits through copying that you eventually find your voice. There are several characters in the book who narrate different sections. So there's the woman who hosts him, who's a Los Angeles housewife, and there's her sister-in-law, who's a writer. And but he is the primary narrator of the book. And I guess when I started, I was nervous about that. But I think for some reason it's easier for me to write from the point of view of a man than a woman. And a lot of times somebody who's more different than me than not. And you never think about these things while you're working on it, but then later people ask you, you know, what a weird thing for you to do. Why would you do that? And I think it must be because when it's somebody who's so superficially different from yourself, you have only, there's only these few things that connect you. Like in this case, it's mostly about how you learn, you know, you're starting out and you have an idea that you want to be a writer or an artist and how you learn to do that. So it's very clear what you're going to write about. We don't have that much in common. Whereas if I'm writing about the daughter of a family who runs a private school in Los Angeles, I have such a wealth of boring material to use that I wouldn't really know where to start. I ended up going to China and meeting some of these artists whose work I had seen in New York, and that was what sort of kept the story going.